This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for Friday, March 16, 2007. I'm Tom Rogers, in for Todd Gleason and Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll look at the cash grain market with Bruce Bostert of the Ludlow Farmers Co-op in Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, the Senate Budget Committee says it'll add $15 billion to ag spending, but the money needs to come from other programs or from tax increases. Also, USDA Secretary Mike Johanns will tour Biotown USA next week. Dave Dickey will be by with those and other stories. Also this half hour, a Farm Bureau commentary on groundwater, and of course, a look at corn and soybean belt weather. Coming up, it's all on the Friday version of the Closing Market Report.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Well, we had an update on the commodity markets in Chicago today. The wheat contract ended up 6¾ cents higher on the May. That's in Kansas City. Chicago had a higher close, too, up 5¼ cents. The May corn for the nearby in May had a 1¾ cent increase on the day, ending at $3.99.5. The Dease corn up a nickel and a half at $4.03 a bushel. And the soybeans, the nearby contract for May ended up 3 for the week at $7.53.5, up 3 on the day, rather. The November at $7.93.5 a bushel, up 3.5 cents. And the products finished up on the day as well. The Merck, though, down day. Pretty much everything down at least a dollar on the end of trade for this day and this week. Joining us now to make sense of it all as we finish out this week is Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon, Tom.
We saw in the commodities and the grains, at least, the numbers come out from Informa, their guess on what the planting intentions will be. The corn acres, they believe, will be 87.834 million. In soybeans, about 70 million, 70.38 million, rather. And how did that shape up today as traders looked at that at 10:30 this morning and made their choices at that point?
Well, they looked at that pretty friendly, and you know, you throw on top of that that they brought in wheat acres well under 60 or 60.5 million, so they came in at around, I think, 59.8 on all wheat. So that got the wheat short covers to come in, and then we had Iowa grains numbers come out shortly after Informa's. They came in even lower on corn, Tom, at 86.4. Just about the same on beans as Informa at around 70.4, 70.5 million. So the net-net was a very nice short-covering rally right around lunchtime. Did not sustain itself so much, especially in the corn market. The spreads, which we talked about this morning with Dave, the corn spread, especially the July Dease, never did come back around, and they continued to hammer on it, selling the July and favoring the December as a long suit. So we like the corn acreage numbers. It helped us as far as our analysis next week that you have a more productive, supportive corn number going into a new weather pattern is what's expected, that we're going to turn colder and wetter. Our model and our mindset has been that the beans have been bought on tighter and tighter and smaller acres. If we're right on our analysis that between today's private numbers in the corn and a colder and wetter pattern, we would think that would support the corn, especially later in the week next week, and hurt the beans and cause some longs maybe to liquidate there. But, you know, we didn't really like the crude action either. It was down over a dollar by the time the corn and bean pits closed. It has since and did since recover to being only down about 30 to 40 cents, but the grain pits never saw that. And we did like to see the wheat recovery. It held in there fairly good, keeping at least half of its gains on the day. And, you know, the December corn, its 50-day moving average was tested today, and it held. We'd like to see next week them to get that maybe farther away from that and get another move back up into the Dease futures, try and climb above that 410 level, all the while hoping that July is leading it up.
And the nearby contract also tested that 100-day moving average and rebounded as well.
It did. The July corn doesn't look nearly as good or supportive as the December right now, and that's probably the biggest thing that bothers us as we end this week. The front-end falling in corn or any other complex means the trade doesn't really need to ration. You know, ever since last August, last September time period, and then confirmed again this January, the USDA has said we're losing supplies because of too hot of exports, too hot of ethanol use, too hot of livestock demand. Now the spread trade in the Chicago futures market is saying that's not the case. We don't need to ration. We think they're wrong, but by and large it hurts psychology because you really want that demand-led market all the way through planting time period, because then the downside in the December becomes a lot less. If we don't see the July lead us in corn, if we don't see the July beans lead the November in the bean complex, then the trade will start focusing more on new crop supplies, which is probably a little more bearish than they would be thinking about the old crop demand and how we have to keep the supplies here domestically for the ethanol and livestock market and slow down our exports. This past week says, at least to the corn trader, you don't have to worry about that. We've got ample near-term supplies, so that by default, in our view, takes the upside potential in the futures for December. It takes it away somewhat.
What reports are due out between now and when the USDA report comes out at the end of the month, and what might what kind of impact that might that have in advance of the actual USDA numbers that come out?
You know, that's a really good question. Very few is the answer. You've got not only the acreage but also the grain stocks report, again citing what the near term demand is and how much we've drawn down the 06 supplies. But between now and then, not a lot, Tom, and that's why it's probably likely that as we come back Sunday evening, the traders in Chicago will really be looking at the weather. Did we really turn cooler this weekend? And does the GFS model especially continue to show on Sunday night like it did today, the next 10 days having rain situations 6 to 6.5 days out of the next 10 days on the model run? The last one coming in around the 24th, the 23rd, 24th of March, that looks to be a pretty significant system. And we would think that would really slow down the application of anhydrous field work, things like that, especially if we're cold with that much rain coming in. So we think probably the psychology is going to shift away from acres for the near term, probably stay focused on the spreads, and most certainly in our view anyway, it'll concentrate very dramatically on the weather picture. The other thing that might be noted is the wheat-corn spread on a weekly basis shows a technical buy signal on the stochastics that the wheat should gain to the corn. So we would like to see the wheat in a firm position if you're still trying to make up catch-up sales on corn.
You touched on the oil market and the latest movement that made, that the trade that happened after the trade, after the closing bell. What impact that might that have on Monday's trade?
Well, it's a good question, because we saw today that the Dow was down, the crude oil was down, the bonds were lower. And when you have something like that, when they off and the dollar was weak also, when you have all of those complexes weak at the same time, that's a big, big flag to us and a key indicator and a good indication that markets are indeed worried about the global economic slowdown. They're worried about the subprime lending to a lesser degree. Probably the biggest factor right now in the trades played, and crude oil plays a central role in this, is whether the global economy shows further economic decay in some of these future reports. Now, we will say that the unleaded gas prices are extremely high for this time of year compared to last year. Some private analysts are putting the national average already up around that 275, 280 level. That's naturally probably going to keep some support in the crude oil market. That transfers back to the ethanol market, that the margins in ethanol, if unleaded gas is that high, should remain pretty good.
And you mentioned that worry being borne out in the numbers for the week, where the wheat and the corn and the far side soybean contracts ended down from the previous week. Are we down at the level where we were when those very large drops took place about 2-3 weeks ago?
Yeah, that's exactly right. We're right on that level that we really do want to hold, and it goes back to the May wheat that surprised us the most this week. From a standpoint of the technicals, the May wheat contract went below its 200-day moving average 3 days in a row. The last 3 days of this week stayed below it on a closing basis all 3 days. First time we've been below that, Tom, since early October, late September of 06. So using wheat as a key leading indicator like we do in the corn market, for the corn market, that's something we really want to see be evaluated by the trade and maybe move back up above that that 200-day moving average of around 468.5. That would be a nice indicator, technically, to the funds that are maybe on the sidelines right now, that it's maybe okay to come back in and buy some wheat here. And that would generate maybe a continuation of some spillover into the other grains.
Let's touch real quickly on what happened in the Merck today with the downside all the way through the markets.
Very, very interesting day there. We had a record open interest day in futures yesterday in live cattle. Over 301,000 futures contracts traded on a down day like we had yesterday. That is very negative, the market. We suspect here that that's going to be followed up later today with funds selling, that the funds were both the sellers yesterday and they continued their selling today. Obviously, the cash prices in cattle didn't help either. USDA came in with beef cutout down 136 on the light choice, down to 164.64, and only on 97 loads. That didn't help either. That weakness in the live cattle also spilled over into the hog complex, where we suspect there was some additional fund selling there, too.
All right. Anything else to add today?
That'll do it, Tom. Have a great weekend.
You, too. Mike Zuzulo is with Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. Coming up, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather at the bottom of the hour with the folks at the Midwest Regional Climate Center. AM 580's Jay Searles has the forecast for tonight in Illinois and Indiana, partly to mostly cloudy, rather chilly, lows ranging from 19 in far northern Illinois to 29 in the far south, with highs tomorrow from 36 northeast to near 50 in far southern Illinois.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For information, call 866-837-9027.
Agricultural news, the Senate Budget Committee has released its initial suggestions for spending limits on agricultural programs. Committee Chairman Kent Conrad says the panel is calling for a farm bill spending cap that adds $15 billion to the current Congressional Budget Office spending estimate. However, the additional money would need to be covered by cuts in other government programs or by raising taxes. Senate Agriculture Chair Tom Harkin says that falls short of his request.
Now, I understand that we've got this extra $15 billion over 5 years. It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. I had requested $20 billion over 5 years. So 15 is about, what is that, 3/4, I guess, of what I had asked for. It's going to make it very tough for us to do what we need to develop new energy sources in this country, cellulosic ethanol, for example. It's going to make it difficult for us to meet the needs of conservation and to keep an adequate safety net.
Analysts say the announcement raises a number of questions, including whether $15 billion spread over 5 years is enough to meet needs for specialty crops, conservation and environmental programs, cellulosic crops, food and nutrition, and the milk income loss contract program. House Agriculture Chairman Colin Peterson says he does not see a lot of potential for shifting money from one section of the farm bill to another. Peterson says he expects the House Budget Committee to release a similar agricultural recommendation next week. Wisconsin Representative Ron Kind has introduced the Healthy Farms, Food and Fuel Act of 2007. The 3rd District Democrat says the measure has three major components: a healthy foods portion, a biofuels energy title, and a conservation title to deal with demand for voluntary and incentive-based land and water conservation programs.
There's a great need from region to region, from farmer to farmer, to help them be the best possible stewards of their own land. A lot of them are doing innovative things already, but many of them are operating on the margins, making it very difficult for them to implement good land and water conservation programs. Why is this important? Well, it's important for not only the quality of the land that they're producing on, but it's important for habitat protection. It's important for quality water supplies. It's also important for air quality. And 3 out of 4 farmers that are applying for conservation programs today are denied because of the insufficiency of the programs and especially the resources being devoted to it. This legislation would correct it.
In the Senate, New Jersey's Robert Menendez will introduce similar legislation. USDA Secretary Mike Johanns will visit Biotown, USA next Wednesday. Biotown, also known as Reynolds in northwest Indiana, is touted as being an example of what other communities can do to utilize local energy sources. The secretary will help break ground for Phase 2 of the Biotown project. Plans to transform agricultural and municipal waste into electricity. The secretary is expected to discuss the specifics related to renewable energy in the Bush administration's Farm Bill proposals. The secretary will also visit the Cellulosic Ethanol Research Lab at Purdue University and conduct a renewable energy roundtable. And the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development reported yesterday that Brazil's farmers received $1.2 billion in price support guarantees in 2005, up 65% from the preceding year due to unfavorable commodity prices and a weak U.S. dollar. But overall producer support between 2003 and 2005 averaged just 5%, compared with 30% in most Western nations. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
In today's listener opinion forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochkus says now is the time to keep groundwell water in focus.
Are you a groundwater advocate? If not, you should be. More than 40% of all water used for agriculture irrigation is groundwater. An overwhelming majority of rural residents rely on household well water systems. In fact, 95% of all available fresh water is in the ground. In a nutshell, groundwater is a lifeline for rural America. Many farms, homesteads, and rural communities could not exist without it. We simply cannot take groundwater for granted. That is why Farm Bureau is partnering with the National Groundwater Association to spread the word about groundwater, well maintenance, water testing, conservation, and more during National Groundwater Awareness Week, March 11th through the 17th. The Groundwater Awareness Week message is fourfold. First and foremost, protect groundwater with proper storage, use, and disposal of hazardous substances, whether they are household or farm products. What is spilled on the ground, thrown in the trash, or poured down the drain can pollute groundwater. Second, use water wisely. It is a precious resource. Increasingly, it's not just arid or semi-arid places that are experiencing water scarcity. Using groundwater wisely can help ensure a plentiful supply for all. Do your part at home or on the farm by fixing leaky toilets or faucets, installing low-flow showerheads, and using water-efficient appliances and running them only with full loads. If you use sprinklers to water the lawn or garden, check often to make sure they're placed where needed. Third, get an annual well maintenance check. It's less expensive in the long run. Not only will regular maintenance help prevent breakdowns, it will also ensure efficient water well systems operation. That means less cost to the delivery of water to your house, fields, or livestock. Finally, get an annual water test. The cost is usually nominal. As a well owner, it's your responsibility to ensure that the water from your well is safe to drink. A certified laboratory can provide a detailed analysis of your water. Your county health department may offer well water testing. Do-it-yourself tests are also widely available, but make sure the one you use is laboratory certified for accurate and reliable results. Most water quality problems can be solved. If you detect problems in your well supply, a certified well water contractor can provide assistance. The human body is 65% water. A person can survive just 8 to 10 days without water, but it takes weeks or even months to die from lack of food. So, if you think you can do without good quality groundwater, you're all wet. This is Amy Rochkus with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Roach's comments are her own and reflect her opinions. They don't necessarily reflect those of the station, and we strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, give us a call at area code 217-333-0850.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
Joining us now for a look at the cash grain market is Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op in Ludlow, Illinois. Good afternoon, Bruce.
Good afternoon, Tom.
How's basis been?
Well, overall, pretty quiet. The processor numbers have been dead steady on corn and soybeans. Export markets, big difference there. The corn's been relatively quiet, down a couple cents, but choppy through the last week or so. Beans have been weak, though. They've been under pressure. We're in that period where we're handing off the export markets to the South American crop. They're, what, 37% harvested or so, or were last week. So our time on the exports is pretty much done here till this fall.
Now, how about on the producer side? Are you seeing people selling?
Cash movement has been real quiet. The producers were good scale-up sellers. When we've seen things break back, haven't really seen much as far as panic selling on the way down. Probably continue to have that mixed bag where there's just not a whole huge amount of corn that needs to move old crop, but there are quite a few soybeans left out there.
Might be the playing intentions report might have an impact on whether they decide to sell later on?
That's going to be our next big number out there, is that planning intentions report on the 30th. So that's what we'll be keying off of on there. That, of course, and your regular weather checklist, you know, too wet to get planted, too cold, too hot, too dry. We'll work through that checklist through the course of the summer.
You mentioned processor demand. That's been pretty stable?
Yes, good stable processor demand. It has been steady. Soybean side, you haven't really seen the processor have to chase anything the last few weeks, but it's been out there. The corn numbers just keeps on going.
So anything else that's moving the market right now?
Well, of course, like everything else, we're watching the outside markets and we're watching the funds. And technically, it's a lot of technical issues out there. And you see a certain amount of basis reaction just to the board selling off and slowing cash movement as a result of that.
All right. What are your prices right now?
We are at 379 on nearby corn into Paxton, 371 for new crop. Beans, 717 and 765.
All right. Thanks a lot, Bruce.
Thank you.
Bruce Brostard is with the Ludlow Co-op. In about 2 minutes, we'll take a look at today's agricultural weather. Your regional newscast is next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jeff Bossert. About two dozen people are still searching for an 8-year-old boy who disappeared when the boat he went over a dam at Clinton Lake. The boy has been missing since Wednesday night when he, his uncle, and grandfather went out on the 17-foot aluminum fishing boat. Department of Natural Resources officials say the bodies of 59-year-old Richard Hunter and 29-year-old Jason Hunter were found just below the spillway yesterday. A DNR spokesman says the search for the young boy continues today, but it doesn't look promising that he'll be found alive. Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan says 4 of every 5 requests for help in getting information from the government comes from private citizens. Madigan's second annual report on her public access counselor shows that in the past year, the office responded to 988 requests for assistance in getting records under the Freedom of Information Act or complaints about government bodies meeting in secret. Nearly 800 of those came from citizens. Hundreds of thousands of small businesses from Illinois received letters from Governor Rob Blagojevich this week The governor says those letters address what he calls misinformation about his proposed $6 billion business tax, but business leaders say the governor's letters are misleading. The letters say businesses with less than $1 million in revenue are exempt from the revised tax structure as part of his gross receipts tax. And a state advocacy group for the developmentally disabled hopes to make more people aware of a waiting list for those seeking care. The ARC of Illinois estimates that while about 5,000 people in Champaign, Ford, and Iroquois counties are eligible, just 100 are on the list. The group's executive director says Illinois ranks 47th in the country in funding to care for the developmentally disabled. Tony Pulowski says the money is there to support facilities, but not the staffing. And families who have someone receiving that type of care often have to place them in facilities far from home. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.
And I'm Tom Rogers. This is the Closing Market Report on AM 580. And joining us now for a look at agricultural weather is Steve Hilberg, the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center here on the U of I campus. Good afternoon, Steve.
Good afternoon, Tom.
We had some beautiful weather earlier this week, and I heard a couple people saying, gee, would it be enough to get farmers thinking of going out in the fields? Well, it may not happen for a little while now with the change to the weather. As far as
the warmth certainly was conducive to that. Gets the ground thawed out because of the cold first half of February and no snow cover until the blizzard, we actually froze the ground pretty well down. So now that it's thawed, though, now we're going to be getting a lot of rain on top of that. And as you mentioned, it looks like a pretty wet week ahead. We'll start off this weekend with some nice weather as high pressure drifts across the upper Midwest. But by Sunday night, we'll start seeing a moisture return into the Midwest and Illinois and Indiana, and then probably Monday we could see some showers, but things will really pick up about the middle of the week. Strong southerly flow, and looks like between basically Wednesday and next week, and we'll have several waves of showers and thunderstorms coming through Illinois and Indiana. So, as you mentioned, it will be wet.
Any indication of how long that wet pattern is going to last?
Well, it looks
a little
like
too early
down,
to tell,
at least
huh?
through next weekend,
yeah.
And then and getting out beyond that, it's getting a little bit risky in terms of looking at the models, but looks like things would tend to dry out as we set off some northwesterly flow over the Midwest. But this week it looks like particularly wet, and then perhaps a break. But right now it looks like the general pattern is going to be conducive to marching systems across the country. The good thing about after this next week is they might be spaced out farther apart than they will be next week.
So you're saying that much of the rest of the nation is going to see the same thing?
Yeah, especially the eastern half. Next week, a lot of this will be coming up from the southwest, from the Gulf. The western U.S. and the Great Plains, wheat-growing areas won't see much, but the eastern U.S. will. Maybe toward the end of the period, we might see a little bit more precipitation out in the west a bit, but generally it'll be the eastern half of the country.
And the chance for severe weather for us?
I would say there's probably going to be some possibilities with these waves coming up through here next week. Hard to pinpoint when and where at this point because things will be moving at a fairly good clip. But I would say probably the latter half of the week, or maybe Thursday into Friday, might be one good opportunity for that. We don't have a lot of real cold air coming in here, so we're not going to have a funnel system like we did this week, but upper-level dynamics might be such that we could trigger some severe weather toward the latter half of next week.
And are you seeing anything else in growing areas around the world that you're looking at?
Not at this point. We're sort of paying attention to the U.S. now, gearing up for planting, so hopefully we'll get through, get some dry weather in here to get things ready for the farmers getting out in the field.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Okay, Tom.
Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. That's today's Closing Market Report for Friday, March 16th. Look at getting ahead of myself there. Remember, join us tomorrow morning at 11:30 for Commodity Week, our weekly analysis of what's happening in agriculture. Todd Gleason returns on Monday. I'm Tom Rogers.